So we left off in our review that Esav realizes that he's been robbed. Esav wants to avenge what he feels, and Yaakov is told by his parents, go find yourself a wife, and Rivka says, I'll send word, I'll call you back. And Yaakov leaves. He's on his way to Haran. He passes the Temple Mount and he realizes he has Kvitas Aderech, that the same day he leaves, he suddenly finds himself down by Lavan, and he says, can't be, I passed the Temple Mount and I didn't realize it. So he makes an about face and returns to pray there, and Hashem says, if he's by my holy place, I want him to pray here. So God makes the sun set early that night, and Yaakov prays the evening prayer. We know that Avraham, the second letter of his name, is a beis, so he instituted the prayer of Boker, the morning, Shachris. Yitzchak, the second letter of his name, is Tzadi, so he instituted Tzoraim, the afternoon prayer, that we give it the nickname of Mincha. And Yaakov, the second letter of his name, is Ein, Erev, evening. Yaakov instituted the evening prayer, the prayer of Arvit. So here's where Yaakov institutes it. He comes to the Temple Mount and he prays there. And he takes some of the stones from the place to cover his throat in case an animal attacks him. He should be able to respond. And after 14 years that he's been learning by Shem and Aver, and he hasn't had a decent night's sleep, he lies down that night. And as he's lying down to sleep, he has a dream. And there he sees a ladder, and the ladder goes up to heaven. And angels are coming down, and they look at his face, and they go back up to heaven, and they compare his face with the face that's etched on the heavenly throne. And they say, he's not living up to his potential, let's kill him. And God is upon him, God's protecting him. And God tells him, I am Hashem, the God of your fathers, Avram and Yitzhak, even though ordinarily God does not say, I am the God of so-and-so so long as he's alive, because a person always has potential of sinning. So God won't associate himself with the person's name until the person has completed his life in a successful manner. But Yitzchak, being that he's blind and he's at home, so he doesn't have so much potential for sins, he's like dead. We say that a person who's blind, a person who has tzaras, a person who has no children, in certain respects, these people are treated as though they're dead. So Yitzchak, it's as though the life he's led is basically over. And God says, I am the God of Yitzchak. I'm going to give you the ground you're lying on, the ground of Israel, and to your offsprings. And here Yaakov gets the vision, the prophecy, that he will continue the line from Avram and Yitzchak. And his offsprings will multiply, and they will expand. Yaakov got a promise that his children will expand. Avram got a promise, you'll have this land. Yaakov got a promise, Uforatzto, you will expand to the east, to the west, to the north, to the south. That is the strength of Yaakov. We sing about it on Shabbos. We say, Nachala bli mitzarim, right? Bli mitzarim nachala. He who keeps Shabbos gets an inheritance without any borders, like Yaakov. The Torah teaches us that Yaakov got an inheritance without borders. He was told to expand. And the Torah teaches us also that he who keeps Shabbos gets a nachala, gets an inheritance that's bli mitzarim, like Yaakov, without borders. So God tells him here, you will expand and be a source of blessing to the world, and I will protect you as you go and bring you back home to this land. I won't leave you till we fulfill what I promised you. And Yaakov awakens and he recognizes he slept in a holy place. He had seen the ladder leading to the gates of the heavenly temple that corresponds to the temple on earth. And he has awe. He says, these are the gates to heaven. He takes the 12 stones he had been lying on that have united to form one stone, corresponding to the fact that he will have 12 children, which will unite to be the one people of Israel. And he erects it as a matzeva, a stone to worship on. In the times of the Avos, their altars were made of one stone. They were called matzeva, a one-stone altar. Later on, when the idol worshippers adopted this one-stone altar, so God says, I don't like it anymore. It's being used for idol worship. We are prohibited from making a one-stone altar. Anytime we want to make a mizbeach, we have to build an altar of many stones. We may not make it of one stone. So in Yaakov's time, it had not yet been adopted as a practice by the pagans. So in Yaakov's time, God still liked it, and that's why Yaakov erects this one stone as a one-stone altar, a matzeva. And he libates oil on it. God miraculously had him find some oil. he has nothing else to his name, but he found this oil and he uses it as a libation. He pours it in honor of God and names the place Beit El. He takes a vow and says, God, if you'll be with me and watch me and give me to eat bread and clothes to wear. Sometimes people have bread and they can't eat. Sometimes they have clothes and they can't get bread. He says, you'll give me bread to eat and clothes to wear, and I return home peacefully. You're going to be my protector. So then this stone, I'll erect it as a house of worship to you, Hashem. And I'll take a tenth, I'll give a tenth of everything. And now he goes out to his family, to Lavan, and he comes to the well, and he meets the shepherds. And there's a huge stone on the well, and he asks him, brothers, where are you from? You see, he starts with small talk. That's their heretz. You talk to someone, you start with small talk. So they tell him, we're from Haran. He asks him, do you know Lavan? They say, we do. He asks, is everything okay by him? They say, yeah. And there's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep. So Yaakov says, hey, why are you guys sticking around? They all gathered early because they said, yesterday something weird happened. The sun set early. Maybe it'll happen again today. Yaakov tells them, why are you guys here so early? They say, well, we wait for everyone to gather. We remove the stone. We give the sheep to drink. So when Rachel comes with the sheep, so he walks over and rolls the stone off the well. He does what it would ordinarily take many shepherds to do. We see his strength. He's a 60-year-old man. I don't remember his age here, but he's over 60. And Yaakov tells her that he can take on her father, and he sees that she's the one that's going to be his wife and will not ultimately be buried with him. She goes and tells her father. Her father assumes he's come with wealth. He comes out and he sees him empty-handed. So he says, maybe he has his money on him. He gives him a hug. He says, maybe he has some jewels in his mouth. He gives him a kiss. And in those days, it was customary that you kissed mouth to mouth. If you kissed someone not on their mouth, so it was a sign of distancing. Any kiss that meant closeness was that was what was customary in the time of the Torah.
So that's why Brezhnev was kissing everybody in the mouth.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He was political leader of Soviet Union. And he's accustomed the social communist party. Now from Africa, he had the keys.
Okay.
It was like anecdotes. He had the keys.
Yeah, everybody.
It's an official meeting with socialist republics.
So Lavan takes him in and he tells him.
So was it the same?
Probably? You have to ask him. I don't know what he had in mind. So Lavan tells the people, Yaakov sits down with Lavan, and Lavan asks him, hey, what's going on here? How come you're coming here without anything? And he tells Lavan how Esav wanted to kill him. He had to run. Esav sent his son Eliphaz after him. Eliphaz caught up with him and said, hey, I know I'm not supposed to kill, but I also know I'm supposed to listen to my father. And in our house, kibbutz avim is the number one mitzvah. And my father told me to kill you. What am I supposed to do? So Yaakov says, here, take my money. It's as though I'm dead. And Yaakov ends up in Haran without anything. So Lavan says, okay, but we're family. So Yaakov stays by Lavan for a month and works watching the sheep. Lavan hadn't had any sons. He wasn't blessed yet. He had daughters, which is one form of blessing, but he didn't have sons. So Yaakov, when he comes, he takes the job from Rachel, and he starts watching the sheep. And after a month, Lavan tells him, look, what do you want as your wages? He sees Yaakov's doing a good job. He doesn't want him to walk off. So Yaakov tells him, I want Rachel. I'll work for 7 years for Rachel, your young daughter. Now, this is an important bargaining tactic. Notice Lavan was a good bargainer. He didn't offer. If Yaakov would have said, I want Rachel, and kept quiet, maybe Lavan would have said, okay, work for me for a year and you could have her. Yaakov thinks she's so precious, I'll work 7 years. Off the bat, he offers him a large number, which needs to be discussed. But on the surface, we could learn here a bargaining tactic. When we're bargaining, sometimes it's best to let the other side give an offer first. Sometimes it goes the other way. And I was dealing with someone, and he said to me, how much do you want the markup to be? How much do you want to make on this? So I said, you give the price. I figured I'd learn from here. So he said, no, you give the price. So I said, look, I don't know a ballpark figure, but 100% sounds like I wouldn't complain. If I'll make 100%, I won't complain. So I knew that 100% was exorbitant. I figure I got to give him a number that he'll feel bad telling me 30% after that, right? So he said, I was thinking more 30%, but we could go 40%, maybe 50%. Okay, I gave him the option of giving the number first, learning from this story. So Yaakov said, okay, I'll work 7 years for Rachel, your young daughter. And he carefully chooses his words to say Rachel, your daughter, who's the younger daughter, so that Laban can't play games with him. He can't switch the names around. He can't bring in a Rachel from the marketplace and try to sell her off. We agreed to Rachel. Which Rachel? No, he says, your daughter, who's the younger one, and nonetheless, Laban's going to back out on it. So Yaakov works for 7 years, and he thinks he's got a bargain, because he loves her so much. And then he tells Laban, that's it. It's my, I'm in my last year of work, so let me have my wife. I know it's not yet up, but I've hit the last year. So Laban gathers all the people, and he makes a party. And that night, he gives them Leah. And Leah spent all of her youth knowing that her twin sister, Rachel, everyone's been saying she's going to marry Yaakov and Leah's going to marry Esav. We have cousins who are twins, Yaakov and Esav. We have cousin girls who are twins, Leah and Rachel. So the older one will marry the older one, the younger one will marry the younger one. And Leah has spent her whole life praying, Hashem, don't let this happen to me. Let me marry Yaakov. And God accepted her prayers. And now Laban tricks Yaakov and brings in Leah. And Rachel doesn't want Leah to get embarrassed. So Rachel stays not too far behind. And anytime Yaakov asks a question, Rachel answers it. So Yaakov thinks he's with Rachel. The next morning, word gets out, Yaakov's being tricked. Now the people knew that he was being tricked. That's why they sang that night, Hilea, 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 Hilea. She's Leah, she's Leah, she's Leah. They were trying to make a joke. They're playing with Laban's nerves. Alluding and they're showing that it's Leah, and they're playing a game. Maybe Yaakov is going to catch on. The next morning, Yaakov caught on. Okay, everyone knew about it. And the next morning, word spreads, and Esav hears that Yaakov married Leah. So Esav was very happy. He said, I heard the younger one's better looking. He tricked me, my brother. He took Leah, no problem. I'm going to take Rachel. And when Rachel was helping Leah not get embarrassed, was helping Leah because she didn't want Leah to suffer the embarrassment of being caught, she was really risking ending up herself with Esav, which is what Esav was thinking as well. That's why when ultimately Yaakov's going to meet up with Esav, Yosef's going to ensure that Esav can't put his eye on Rachel. He hides her because he's worried. What's Esav going to say? So the next morning, Yaakov comes to Laban and he says, what'd you do? We agreed on Rachel. Why'd you trick me? And Laban says, no, our custom here is that you never marry off the younger one before the older one. You said Hakitana, the smaller one. You didn't say the younger one. Leah is really the smaller one. She's not the younger one, but she's the smaller one. Finish this week that you owe her, and then we'll give you the other one for another 7 years of labor. And Yaakov fulfills it, and then Yaakov marries Rachel. Chazal say that Yaakov said, I understand Rachel, she's a tzaddikas, but I don't understand you, Leah. How come you agreed to go through with this? You tricked me. And Leah said, I learned from you. You tricked your father. You said you were Esav when you came to your father. And when Yaakov heard this, he didn't have an answer, because Yaakov had really tricked his father, and now he was tricked. But he didn't like Leah for what she did, and he was ready to divorce her. And then God made a miracle that Leah got pregnant. Ordinarily, a woman doesn't get pregnant. A woman who's a virgin doesn't get pregnant from the first time she's with her husband. But here, God made it that Leah, even though Yaakov wasn't continuing with her, they were separate in today's terms. They separated, but they weren't divorced. Nonetheless, Leah, he sees that Leah's pregnant, and he realizes that this is a sign from above that God really wants him married to Leah. And so he continues his marriage with Leah. Yeah.
How did Leah know about the trick of Yaakov with his father?
It's near neighborhood.
Everyone I don't know. It's logical to say that it became well known, but I don't know.
It's just above Aram Zobah, like Aram Hamat, Aram Damascus, Aram Zobah, Aram Hamat, and then Aram Naharaim.
Okay. Leah has a first child and she names him Reuven. God's seen my affliction. Pretty tough name. She has a second child and she names him Shimon. God's heard that I'm hated. She feels, in comparison to Rachel, that she's hated. And this is something we have to know, that a woman feels things very deeply. So I was once at a Shabbos table, and the husband tells his wife, "This week the egg salad didn't come out good." And she says to him, "I love you too." And I was stunned by that answer. Wow. Then I realized, no, Chazal told us that when you say a small comment to a wife, she takes it much, much bigger. So she felt like he said to her, "You're a lousy cook, and I don't know when was the last time you made something that was edible, and now the egg salad you've messed up too." So to a sentence like that, when there's a guest, I'm sitting at the table, so how can she defend herself? She says, "I love you too. How can you say that to me?" We don't hear it that way, us men. We don't talk that way, and we don't hear it that way. But women, when they respond so harshly, so Leah says, "I'm hated." Chazal say, it's not that she was hated. It's that he loved Rachel more. But for a woman, that feeling is, "I'm hated." If a woman doesn't feel and get that feeling reinforced, that she's number one, then in her eyes, and her feelings, she is hated. So Leah names her son Shimon, "God's seen, God's heard that I'm hated." And then she has another child, and she says, "Three kids, I'm not going to manage with three kids without my husband. I only have two hands. Now my husband will stick along when I have to go places, because there's no choice, there are three kids," so she calls him Levi. She has a fourth child, and she says, "Now I know I really have to thank God, and I'll name him Yehuda," which has both the name Yudke Vavke, and thanks. Rachel sees she hasn't had children, and she tells Yaakov, "Give me children or else I'm dead." And Yaakov gets upset at her, and he says, "Am I instead of God? God held it from you. You see, God's granting me children. He's not granting you children. Speak to God." And our sages say he didn't answer her correctly. That's not a nice way to talk to a wife who's so upset. So even though she instigated the conversation, she's the one that spoke harshly initially and said, "Give me children or else I'm dead." And what does Yaakov answer her? He says, "What, am I God? God prevented you from having children. What can I do?" We would think that's a normal reaction. No, Chazal say God took him to task for answering her that way. So again, this is something we have to remember, that if a wife speaks and suddenly it sounds like she went to the extreme, I'm like dead if you don't do it. So yeah, we see it already in the Torah. And the Torah expects us as husbands to have patience for that, to have understanding. So she gives him Bilhah, her maid, and she says, "Here, take my maid as a wife, and then when she has children, it'll be as though I have children." And so the maid becomes pregnant, and Rachel names the child Dan. "God's judged me, gave me a son." She has another child, and Rachel says, names the child Naphtali, so to speak. I'm catching up to my sister. I'm attaching. I'm getting close to her. Leah sees she's stopped having children, so she takes her maid and asks Yaakov to marry her. Yaakov has the first child, and Leah says, this is a sign of good fortune. She names him God. God means fortune. And then she has a second son, Zilpah, the second maid, and Leah names him Asher, which is a name of Osher, happiness, things are going well. Reuven brings home these special flowers. Some say they're jasmine. There are all kinds of opinion whether these flowers work or not.
Dudaim, no?
Dudaim, yeah. What are Dudaim? Okay. Okay. Look, over there, the Ben Ezra says, what's the name? They're Ramban.
Harry Potter, Mandragora.
Yeah,
okay. He brings them home, and people say that they, when a woman has them, then they make her more fertile. So Rachel sees them and she says, "Can I have some of those flowers?" And Leah says, "You took my husband, now you want to take the flowers my son brings me?" And Rachel says, "Okay, you could have them tonight if you give me those flowers." She wants children. Now here, Yaakov comes home and Leah goes out to greet him and she says, "Come to me, because I so to speak, paid your wages with the flowers of my son." And that night she becomes pregnant and they name him Yisachar. I got my wages, so to speak. And here there are different understandings. Do these flowers work? But because Rachel, so to speak, did business with the rights to her husband, so they didn't work for her. Or do these flowers work? And they already used, their potency was used up on Leah, and when Rachel took them, they didn't have any effect on her. Do these flowers work? And Leah, who had him that night, just after she got the flowers, so they imparted their potency on her, and Rachel didn't have him that night, so they didn't work with her. Or which many Rishonim say these flowers don't work, but Leah and Rachel thought they work, because common folklore was that they work. So they thought they work, but the pasuk specifically says that God heard her and heard her prayer and gave her a child, the fifth child. And then she again becomes pregnant and she has the sixth child, which is now they're up to number 10. 10 children have been born. And she names him Zivulun. And then she gets pregnant and she says, uh-oh, if I have one more child, we have on tradition that there are going to be 12 children to Yaakov. If this is a boy, then what's going to happen? My sister is going to be left with one. There's only one left to fill the 12 tribes. So she prays to Hashem, switch it to a girl. And at the same time, Rachel's become pregnant. All the other mothers, the Imos, Leah, Bilah, Zilpah, started praying, Hashem, please let her become pregnant. And Hashem does let her become pregnant. And in heaven, they switch the children. So Leah was supposed to have a boy, and Rachel was supposed to have a girl, but they switched it thanks to Leah's prayer. Even though ordinarily, once a woman becomes pregnant, 40 days after pregnancy, it's already determined what gender the child's going to be. But Leah asked for a miracle, and it was granted. And that's why we find Dinah had male tendencies. She had a hard time sitting at home. When everyone's outside, she went outside. She got into trouble. She was captured by Shechem. But these male tendencies were because initially her DNA was set up to be a boy. So, yeah. Okay, they do. But that doesn't mean it was easy for her. That was her challenge. You know, we say, David HaMelech woke up early every morning to daven. He woke up at midnight. The Medrash says every day his Yetzer Hara would spend the next 6 hours telling him, every other king sleeps till 3 hours into the day. What are you doing up in the middle of the night praying? You could sleep like every other king every day. You know what it means? We think David HaMelech got up at midnight to pray. It was easy. No, the Medrash says all night long his Yetzer Hara was telling him, get back into that bed. What are you doing up? Okay, so Dinah had a very difficult time, and at one point she fell, and she paid a very heavy price for it. So she has a daughter, and she names that daughter Dinah, and Rachel has a daughter, and she says, God has removed my shame, and she names him Yosef. Rachel's son is Yosef. Yosef means gathered, and Yosef also means God should grant me another, should add another child. And in Tanakh, whenever we discuss another one, very often that other one isn't secondary, isn't like an add-on, but that other one becomes the main one. And that's what happens with Binyamin also. Binyamin is a tremendous person. Chazal say he didn't have a sin that made it worthy for him to die. Binyamin was one of those people that died because God decreed people die. But he lived an almost perfect life. Yeah.
The name Dinah comes from Din, I suppose.
I don't remember what the commentaries say.
It would be interesting to know. Like every of the children, like when he was called that and that because of that and that, and then when she was called Dinah.
Right. I don't remember. We have to look at the commentaries. I don't remember. Sorry, we have to look.
That would be really interesting.
Remind me, we just have to cover ground. We're taking too much time on this parsha anyways. Yosef is born. Yaakov's finished his 14 years. And he comes to Lavan and says, give me my wife and kids. I worked for you. You know I've worked for you. And Lavan says, you know, I did my sorcery and I know that my blessing is because you're around. And Chazal tell us there are certain things that have to be adjacent. Right after we wash, we're supposed to make the blessing of a motzi. Right after we wash, we're supposed to bench. We don't talk in between my machonim and benching. There are certain things that are supposed to be adjacent. One of the things that are usually adjacent is a Talmud Chacham. You bring a Talmud Chacham into your home, and swiftly after that you get blessing. Chazal tells a person to try to bring, to have the merit, to have a guest in his home who's a Talmud Chacham. So Lavan says, I saw, you came to my house, and my business prospered, my family prospered, I started having male children, not only female children. I want you to stick around. Tell me what wages you want. And Yaakov says, you know, I did my best working for you, and you became a very wealthy man ever since I started working for you. I've been working very hard for you, and things are going well for you, and I'm happy. But I also have to make something for my family. So Lavan says, what do you want? And Yaakov says, I don't want you to give me anything. We'll make a deal. Let's remove all the sheep from the the corral, all the sheep that are striped, that have dots, and those sheep that are born from now on that have stripes or dots will be mine. We'll remove all those with stripes and dots now. We'll leave me a totally white flock, and those that have the stripes and dots from now on, those are going to be mine. So Lava, and this is how you'll be able to check. Anytime you come to my flock and you see a totally white sheep, you know it's not mine. You could always check me out. So Lavan removes all the different goats, sheep that have the different stripes that they agree on, and he sets up a corral with those animals 3 days' journey from there. And Yaakov watches the rest of the sheep. And God makes a plague that destroys most of Lavan's sheep that Lavan's watching. And Yaakov works. He has different ways naturally of helping the sheep work in his direction. When Yaakov sees that every time they make a deal, Lavan says, no, we didn't mean these stripes, we meant those stripes, we didn't mean these dots, we meant those dots. Every time Lavan switches it around, so Yaakov says, okay, how am I going to fight for myself? So Yaakov finds a natural way of putting different sticks in the troughs where they would drink, sticks that are carved in the different designs, and that causes the sheep to have to bear fruit, to have children that have those different stripes. And Yaakov is careful not to let the sheep crossbreed. Meaning he could cheat. He could take the striped sheep and have him breed with the white sheep and then have more children. But he's careful. He's not cheating Lavan. And he's very wealthy. And he hears Lavan's children talk about how he's robbing their father blind. And he sees that Lavan isn't so happy with him like he was in the past. And after he's seen all this, God appears to him and tells him, go back home, I'm going to be with you. Notice this term, I'm going to be with you, is the term that God appears to us in Galut and tells us to go back home. What name does God tell us when he sends Moshe? Heyeh asher heyeh. I will be with you as I will be with you. That is the name God gives us when he calls us back home. So Yaakov calls Rachel and Leah out to the field. Whenever you have something important to say, look around, make sure that no one can overhear you. I just heard a horrifying story. There was a guy who was closing a deal on his home the next day. So the night before, a robber knocks on the door, pulls out a gun, and makes him lead him to the safe and cleans out the safe. And the police never caught the robber. And then a short while later, I got to hear more details. When they had closed the deal on the house, so they had agreed that on the papers they'll write that the house was being sold, let's say, for $500,000. And on the books, he'd give him cash, $200,000. So he had at home that night almost $250,000 that he was supposed to give in cash. Now, they obviously didn't do this advice that Yaakov Avinu said. They didn't discuss it out in the field where they could be sure no one overheard. Someone heard, and someone knew that the night before the deal, he'd have that in cash at home. And that someone arranged someone to come knocking on the door with a gun. And now, what could the guy tell the cops? Yeah, I had $200,000 in cash lying in that safe. He didn't kill him, but he got away with nearly $250,000 cash. So Chazal tells us we're supposed to learn from Yaakov. When Yaakov has to talk to his wife, what does he do? He takes him out to the field where he could look. There are no trees in the way. He could look and see, is there anyone hiding nearby? Whenever you have something to discuss, if it's confidential, Chazal say, Of Hashemayim Yulich Takol. The birds will pass your words. Whatever you say spreads. You want to be sure no one's listening? Check behind the door. No, not enough. No. Go to the field. Go somewhere where you could see there's no one around. So Yaakov starts telling them, look, I see your father. He's not so happy with me. And God's been with me. And you know I've worked him so hard. And you know how he's tricked me time and again. Where every time we make a deal, he backs out of the deal. And I had a vision, and the angel, I saw how the angel keeps helping me have sheep that are legitimately mine. And the angel told me, look at all the sheep, how I'm blessing you. I see Lavan's trying to trick you. I'm the God that you anointed that stone, and you promised me something there. Now go back, return to your land. So now, Yaakov tells him prophecy. He's responsible to go back and fulfill his promise. And Yaakov's going to err. He's going to go back, and he's going to delay filling his promise. And because he delays filling his promise, he's going to have the story with Dinah, and he's going to lose Rachel. Chazal say when we make a promise, we have to live up to it right away. So Leah and Rachel tell him, look at the way our father's treating you. He treats us all like strangers. He sold us. Usually when you marry off a daughter, you give her an adunya. Chazal say, whenever you have a daughter to marry, so prepare stuff for her. Have linens to give her when she gets married. Have money to help her out with. You marry off a daughter, you give her stuff. You don't say, okay, you want to marry my daughter, you pay me 7 years worth of work. You say, you want to marry off my daughter, I'll help you out. Let me see what I can help you with. Chazal say, if you have a daughter that's not too attractive, so make her attractive with other things. So the daughters say, Rachel and Leah, he treated us like strangers. He made money off our marriage. And then he tried to take all our money. And anything that God helped us out with, that's the only stuff that we have left. Whatever God said, go do. And Yaakov is careful, and Imos, Rachel and Leah, are very careful to be honest. They don't have this conversation in a religious vein. Very often in a household, people can be dishonest with one another. If one spouse wants to live in Israel, and the other one wants to live in Chutz La'aretz, so the one that wants to live in Israel can start banging on the table and say, the halacha is we have to live in Israel. Come on, where's your frumkeit? I thought I married a religious husband. Why don't you want to move? Don't you know it's the biggest mitzvah and give lectures about Torah? We have to be honest. Wait a second. You want to live in Israel, right? So don't use the Torah as your backup. What's the main reason you want to move there? The main reason you want to move there is because the Torah says so? Yeah, is that how you perform other mitzvot? Or is the main reason you want to live there because you like living in Israel? And there's also a mitzvah, and it's very convenient that the mitzvah is on your side of the argument. That's what Yaakov does, and that's what the mothers do. When Yaakov comes to his wives, he doesn't begin by saying, God said so, so we have to do it. No, he begins by saying, look, your father's treating me unfairly. I see that he's upset with me. He's trying to steal our money. And the angel told me, look, I've been with you. It's time to go home. He starts off by telling them all the practical reasons why he himself wants it. And then he says, and God really told me. And how do they answer him? They answer him in the same honesty. They say, look, our father's treating us unfairly. He's treating you unfairly. He's cheating us. And God said so, of course. A person has to be honest. Yaakov takes his wives and children, and he takes all his wealth, and he leaves. And Lavan's been out shearing his sheep, his 3 days' journey away, and Rachel knows that he has this idol, which is called Trophim. It's the skull of a firstborn that was murdered. And Lavan has this idol that can talk. When you have a special incantation and you put special type of black magic or whatever it is, you could get the skull to talk. And she wants her father to stop serving idols. And she also doesn't want him to ask this idol exactly where they are. So she takes the skull and she puts it in her bag. She doesn't tell Yaakov about it. She steals it. And Yaakov runs away.
Born of love?
Doesn't say whose firstborn he took to do it. And after they've been traveling for 3 days, Yaakov with all the little children and the sheep, Lavan hears that he's traveled. And Lavan has to travel 7 days' journey. He's 3 days away in the other direction. Plus Yaakov's traveled 3 days' journey. And Yaakov does, and Lavan does 7 days' journey in 1 day. And they meet up on the mountain of Gilad. And that night, there's the camping. Lavan's on one side of the mountain, Yaakov's on the other side, and God sends Lavan a dream, and he tells him, you be careful not to harm Yaakov. You be careful, don't touch him. And Lavan catches up to Yaakov, and he asks him, what'd you do? What'd you steal me for? What'd you steal my daughters as though they were captives? What'd you run for? Why didn't you tell me? I would have made a party for you. And this is the one time in the book of Bereishis that the word Simcha appears. The word Simcha appears only once in the book of Bereishis over here. Lavan says, I would have sent you with a simcha. You didn't let me kiss my children goodbye. You did a foolish thing. You know, I could harm you guys, but your God appeared to me last night, and he told me I shouldn't. And why'd you steal my God? I understand you suddenly missed your family, you went. But why'd you steal my God? Just a second. You want something?
Yeah, I was always wondering, why did she hang on to it? They're in the desert. She could bury it anywhere. There's a lot of sand around. Why did she actually hang on to it?
I also was wondering that for many years. I don't remember. I remember once seeing an answer to that. For many years, that question bothered me. And I'm trying to remember. I think I once saw someone who discussed it. And I don't remember. If you could remind me, I'll try to look it up. I'll see if I can find it. But it's a. I agree with the question. Yeah, it's a very good question. What was she holding on to it for?
She was
Maybe the skull would have told anybody that it was stolen from Lavan, and
she could have buried it. That's what he's saying. You're in the desert,
no,
buried in the desert.
It could be. Maybe Lavan had a means of finding the idol. Maybe he had some,
could be,
some
right.
kind of special jewel. He made so much black magic and
could be.
Stuff.
So Lavan's son was Bilam. I mean, this was a family of people who knew how to do this stuff.
Makes sense. It's black magic.
Okay. So Yaakov tells him, I had to run because I was scared you'd steal your daughters from me. And as far as stealing, well, one of the Noahide laws is you're not allowed to steal, and if anyone steals, they get the death penalty. If you find someone here that stole, and not only that, stole an idol, so they're interested in idol worship, anyone in my camp who steals and is interested in idol worship gets a death penalty. There's nothing to talk about. You're welcome to search. No one here stole your gun. And Lavan starts searching. He begins by searching the tent of Rachel and Yaakov, and then he goes on to the other wives' tents, and then he comes back to Rachel's tent. He says, I know Rachel, she's the one. And Rachel took the trophim, she put him on the camel, and she sat on them, and after Lavan searching the whole tent, she says, I'm sorry, I can't stand up in honor of you. You know, part of their heritage is that we stand up for an elder, and especially our parents and our in-laws. And she says, you know, I'm having the way of women now. And in those times, when a woman was a nida, that's why she's called nida. Nida means ostracized one. The custom was throughout the world that she lives in her own tent. And you don't even step on the sand she steps on. They said even the air she breathes is damaging. So Lavan accepts this. She's not doing anything in his honor. She's staying away from him. Because she says, now I'm in that time of the month. So Rachel uses that excuse and stays sitting on them. And Yaakov had said, whoever stole them will die. And unbeknownst to him, he cursed his own wife. And according to some opinions, that's why a short while later she died. Yaakov gets upset at Lavan and he starts arguing with him. And he tells him, what did I do? You chase after me. You checked all my belongings. Did you find anything from your house? Chazal say, where do you find such a son-in-law? Usually you live by your in-laws. One time you borrow a hammer, one time you borrow a screwdriver, one time you borrow a drill. Your house is naturally, if you live close to one another, so some things go from this house to the other house. That's a normal household. Yaakov says, you found nothing of yours by me. And 20 years I've been working with you. I never cheated you. I never brought you anything harmed. Day, night, heat, cold, I didn't sleep. 20 years I've worked for you. And you've cheated me time and again. If not for God, I'd be empty-handed now. God saw my work and he proved it last night when he told you not to touch me. Now, in everything Yaakov says, he's being very careful to talk with Derech Eretz to Lavan. As much as he's upset at him, you'll notice that his words are with Derech Eretz. And the Ramban points it out sentence after sentence. And from here we could learn the importance of treating our father-in-law with Derech Eretz. No one could tell me that they have a father-in-law who is worse than Lavan. Man was ready to murder his son-in-law, and his son-in-law is talking to him with Derech Eretz. The man cheated him with his wife, and he's talking to him with Derech Eretz. I don't know. I mean, you could tell me. What are you going to tell me? The mother-in-law tried to murder him. She's still not worse than Lavan. Okay? Still, Yaakov talks to him with Derech Eretz. Now, that doesn't mean Yaakov is going to forgo the chinuch of his children. Yaakov still has his principles. Yaakov doesn't let Lavan trample over his home. But at the same time, he speaks to Lavan with Derech Eretz. And Lavan yells at him and says, the girls are mine, the grandchildren are mine, all the sheep is mine, everything you see is mine. Now let's make a treaty that you won't harm me and I won't harm you. And Yaakov tells his children and the people who came with Lavan, let's gather stones. He doesn't want to trouble Lavan, his father-in-law. He says, we're going to make a treaty here, we'll gather the stones. Yaakov himself goes to gather the stones. He doesn't ask Lavan to help. And Yaakov makes a feast there. And they make a pact that they won't come and harm one another. And Lavan, he's a filthy person. So he's been watching how his son-in-law takes wife after wife after wife. So he tells him part of this pact is you're not allowed to take any more wives. He doesn't know that Yaakov, all he wanted was Rachel. What do you want from my life? Yaakov doesn't answer him this. But Yaakov could have said, he's coming to me with claims. I wanted one. I wanted Rachel. You gave me Leah. I wanted one. I wanted Rachel. She gave me Bilhah. I wanted one. I wanted Rachel. And Leah made me marry Zilpah. No, from Lavan's perspective, and very often we have to be aware of this, we could be the most pious in the world. From our in-laws' perspectives, they still can have a lot of room from their perspective to come with claims. And I know a guy that he was sitting before his wedding, and one of the in-laws' family came and sat down and started talking to him about things he should be careful with his wife to treat her properly. So they started saying, you know, she might overdo it, she might really work herself hard. You have to be very careful to watch her, that she rests, that she takes care of herself, because she'll invest too much in the house and she'll forget that she has to eat and drink and sleep. And they're giving him this whole long speech in a positive sense. When they finish the speech, he says, I really appreciate this. I'll take it to heart. But now you have to keep your end of the deal. I'll do my best. And I appreciate everything you told me. But you have to remember that whatever you see, you're only seeing part of the picture. Don't judge me. You don't know what you're seeing. You only know the edge. You see one thing. You don't know what's behind the picture. He was going based upon what it says here. That Laban is coming to Yaakov and he says, part of the deal is you're not allowed to take more wives than my children. And you're not allowed to torture my wives. What does it mean, torture my wives? So Chazal say, to abstain. Laban was concerned on both sides. He said, you're not allowed to torture them. From here we derive that when the Torah says we're supposed to afflict ourselves on Yom Kippur, Inui is abstaining. One's not allowed to be with one's wife on Yom Kippur. So Laban said, you're not allowed to afflict my wife, and you're not allowed to, my daughters, you're not allowed to take more wives. And God's going to be the judge between us. And they make the treaty. They place a sword inside that pile of stones. And that sword is representing that whoever crosses this pile of stones to harm the other one should be killed by this sword. And that's why when a few years later Bilam comes to curse us, ultimately Bilam is killed, it says, Becharev, with the sword. Which sword was Bilam killed with? This sword. This sword that's in the pile of stones. Laban goes back home, Yaakov's headed to Israel, and God sends an ensemble of angels to greet him. Yes?
Could this pile of stones and the sword in it be like the prototype of Excalibur, the Arthur tale?
I don't know. I don't know.
Probably they go in also.
At least it's according to my knowledge, it's the first image of this kind.
Yeah,
well, it seems like it's one sword covered by many stones, not a sword in the
It wouldn't be the first pile of stones to become one stone.
Okay.
Yeshua was kind of a Nasi prince after Moshe because Moshe made Smicha on him.
Okay.
So he was a prince, so. Like
if I had to guess what was the prototype that they took it from, I would sooner say it's the story of Moshe and the staff, where there was a staff stuck in the ground and no one else could pull it out, and Moshe took it out with ease. That makes more sense to me. I always thought that that's where they took it from. Yaakov makes a mistake. He's scared of his brother Esav. He figures I'm passing near his territory, so he sends messengers to Esav and he says, I'm coming, I've been living with Laban until now, I haven't gotten the blessing Dad promised me. All I have are sheep and mules and servants, but I don't have the fat of the land like Dad promised me. I have nothing to be jealous about. And the messengers come back and they say, now you've riled him up. He's coming towards you with 400 generals and their armies. And Yaakov's very scared. He says, I know God promised me, but God didn't give me a prophecy to tell over to others. When God gives us prophecy to tell over to other people, then a prophecy for good is never rescinded. God gave it as a personal prophecy. A personal prophecy, there's no promise that God won't rescind it. Maybe I didn't live up to my end of the deal. Maybe I wasn't good enough. Maybe most of the people will be killed and only a few will remain. And from then, the Jewish people will continue. How do I know that everyone will make it unscathed? I have no guarantee. So Yaakov's very scared. And Yaakov's scared. Maybe I'll have to kill innocent people as well. So he divides the people. And that's what a friend of mine told me once. He said, he had a large sum of money with him. He said, I'm scared that in my apartment anyone could break in and get the money. So don't worry, I took Yaakov Avinu's advice. It's not all in one place. Just like Yaakov Avinu divides the camp, he said, who knows what will happen? So one camp here, one camp there, and ultimately things will be okay. So too, we have to learn from this not to put all our eggs in one basket. And Yaakov assumes if war will happen with one camp, the other camp will escape. And he prays to Hashem and he says, God, I know you've done so much kindness to me. I must be so small now. I have very few merits. When I crossed the Jordan, I had only my staff. I put the staff in the Jordan. It split to two. And now I'm coming back and I have two huge camps. That's how much blessing you gave me. save me please from the hands of Esav. I'm scared. He's capable of murdering everyone here. And you promised me things will go well and that I'll multiply. And that night, he prepares gifts, groups of people to go towards Esav. He sends his servants in advance, ahead. If I'm not mistaken, there's a discussion whether what he did was right, just like by Avram, that Avram gave the people back to the king of Sodom, and God said, what are you giving them over to pagans? They could have been under you and served God. I seem to remember there's a medrash that goes that route with Yaakov over here also, that he gave over servants to Esav. In effect, he was giving them over to a pagan, and if they stayed by him, they wouldn't have been pagans. So he sends all these gifts in advance towards Esav, and that night he thinks to run. And God sends an angel to detain him. He has to meet up with Esav face to face. Now he's changing roles. He's coming back to Israel, and he has to take on a new role. Up until now he was Yaakov. Yaakov comes from the world Okubah. He does things in a roundabout way. He won't go head on with Esav. Even at the childbirth, Esav comes out first and he's holding on to that leg. Now God says, you're going to change. You're going to become Yisrael. You're coming back to the land of Israel. Here you have the power to take him on straight. So Yaakov wants to run and God doesn't want him to run. So God sends an angel, the angel of Esav, to take him on that night. And the angel fights him and the angel is unsuccessful. He doesn't win. And the angel says, okay, it's morning, let me go. They're wrestling and Yaakov has him in a grip and the angel can't win and Yaakov isn't winning yet. And the angel says, okay, let me go, I gotta go. And Yaakov says, no, you gotta bless me. And the angel says, okay, from now on you're gonna be Yisrael. Yisrael means, from the word Yashar, Yisrael means the master of power, Sar of El, of power. And the angel in this battle has succeeded in hitting Yaakov in the thigh, which might be a Lashon Nekia, it might be a reference to his private parts, and Yaakov is limping. And God makes the sun shine in honor of Yaakov, the sun heals him. And here we have a reference that Yaakov is also called the sun in this pasuk, according to one understanding. That's why when Yosef has the dream and he sees the sun and the sun represents Yaakov, Yaakov tells him, how do you know I'm called the sun? Because in this story, after he's taken on Esav's angel, Yaakov gets the nickname of Shemesh. Yeah.
That also confused me. The blessing was before he was hit.
The blessing was after he was hit.
After he was hit in the...
After he was hit, the angel saw that. Even though he hit him, that was the best he could do. He couldn't harm him more. And he said, okay, let me go. And then Yaakov said, I'm not letting you go till you concede that I have a right to the blessings. And the angel said, okay. It was after he was hit. So Yaakov looks up and he sees Esav with his 400 generals coming, and he divides the children and the wives, and he crosses before them and he bows to Esav 7 times, and Esav runs towards him and he's ready to take a bite into his neck, and God makes his neck hard as stone, and Esav takes a bite and his teeth hurt very much after that, and they're both sitting there crying. Esav sees the women and children and he says, who are these? And he's interested in the women and the children. And Yaakov answers him modestly, says, the children are the children that God granted me. He doesn't talk about the women. Everyone comes and bows before them. And Yosef goes before his mother, Rachel. And Esav asks, what was all the camp that came before? And Yaakov says, that was a gift I sent you. Esav says, let's go together. And Yaakov says, no, I have all the women and children. We'll still get to you. And he means, in the end of time, we'll still meet up.
That was my question,
Esav was. All these years, Esav has been taking care of Yitzhak, and that merit is going to stand by him. And that's one of the reasons Yaakov's nervous when he has to meet up with Esav, because he knows it's been 20 years that Esav has the merit of taking care of his father Yitzhak, and Yaakov does not have that merit. And Yaakov is going to pay a price for that. One of the reasons that Yaakov has to suffer the period that Yosef is gone from him is because of these 20 years that Yaakov was not doing Kibbut Avim. So he too had 20 years in his lifetime when his favorite son wasn't around. Yaakov comes to Shechem and he realizes that God just made him a miracle. He makes it whole. And so he institutes something to help the city. Either bathhouses or bridges or infrastructure or a coin. And he purchases the field over there and he erects an altar, and he starts teaching people about God. Dina goes out. The prince Shechem abducts her and takes her forcibly. He wants to marry her. He comes with his father and they ask Yaakov to give her the hand in marriage. The brothers hear of the disgraceful act that he's done, and they say the only way we could get together is if you guys are circumcised. And the people of Shechem agree. They all circumcise. Shimon and Levi come that day. 3 days after their circumcision, the people are weak. The brothers thought, okay, we'll convert them. They could also come under the canopy of God. That's what Yaakov thought they were intending. And if we're going to fight them, then at best we'll go to the palace and we'll kill Shechem and Hamor and we'll take our sister. But no, Shimon and Levi aren't sufficed with that. They killed the whole city. And according to one understanding, the Rambam says they were legitimate because the city transgressed the Noahid laws of instituting a legal system. And according to the other commentaries, they erred. God held it against them. What are you murdering the whole city for? Women, the all the men? What's going on here? And the other nations, the neighboring nations, want to come and fight Yaakov. And Yaakov himself goes out to war against them. And that's why Yaakov says, I own Shechem, because I'm the one that held it in our possession. God tells Yaakov, hey, you promised me something, fulfill your promise. Things are going bad because you didn't fulfill your promise. Go erect that altar. Yaakov tells his people, we have to purify ourselves. They bury all the idols that they captured from Shechem. And Yaakov gets word, he goes there, he erects the Mizbech, and he gets word that his mother Rachel passed away. And he sits Shiva over there. God blesses Yaakov and gives him the name of Yisrael. And Yaakov erects an altar again over there, and libates over there, and names the place again Beit El. They're traveling, and Rachel is in the middle of childbirth, and she dies. And she names the child Ben Oni, son of my sorrow or son of my strength. And Yaakov is going to name him Binyamin, which means son of my right hand, son of my strength. Rachel passes away in childbirth, and Yaakov sees that they're in the middle of traveling. A woman who dies in childbirth, it's a bloody scene. So Yaakov buries her right away over there, and this is God's hand, so that she'll be there when the Jews are exiled. They'll pass by her kever, and they'll pray, and then Rachel will, her merits will stand by the Jews. When they're traveling, so Yaakov moves his bed, his permanent resting place, from Rachel to her maid, to Bilhah, and Reuven protests. And he takes the bed and he moves it to his mother's tent. He says, what? He's going to the maid instead of my mother. And that's Reuben's big sin. Yitzchak passes away. Esav has many children and kings, etc. And we're up to Parshas Vayeshev. And we're going to take a break now.